Sometimes life changes you in a way that you never planned for. You've built your career, maybe your military career, maybe your post-military career. You serve with pride, and you think that you know your direction, your purpose, your meaning in life. And then one day, everything shifts. And that's what happened to Air Force nurse Cherie Cardenas. After two brain injuries, she had to walk away from the work that defined her. What came next wasn't quick or easy for her. Through artwork that she discovered, she found a way to rebuild her confidence, rebuild her peace, and find a new kind of purpose in life. We'll get more into that story in just a minute here, but before we begin, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians who are impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial will be both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Cherie, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've been looking forward to it as well. And I know we've kind of gone back and forth trying to get you on the show, and, you know, scheduling and stuff is always an issue sometimes with you know, this type of environment, you know, trying to get everybody in the same place at the same time. But we're here now and this is great. And yeah, like I said, looking forward to it. So tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about who you are and, you know, kind of military history, that type of thing, just for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and want to kind of get to know who you are first before we kind of dive into your story and kind of a little bit more about who you are.
For sure. I was born a very proud Air Force brat. My father was in the Air Force for 26 years, and he married my mom, who he met in Korea on his way to Vietnam. So we're very much a military family, and I was raised on various Air Force bases and a lot of them overseas. I think I grew up mostly, I would say, from fifth grade till I graduated high school, I was in England. And so we were at Bentwaters and Woodbridge all those years, which was really rare to be able to stay overseas that long. Sure. But my dad finagled his way and we were able to stay. And so it was a lot of fun. I loved our community there. We traveled a lot, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just being a part of the DoD school system and playing sports and traveling and seeing all the other schools, it was a great way to grow up. Perfect. And then I went off to Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I went to school to be a nurse and graduated. And I got a job there locally in Tulsa for about 8 months. And I woke up one morning and I was like, I don't think I could do this every day, just waking up in the same place with the same people. Like, that military life is just always in you. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself at the Air Force recruiter's office and they offered me a nice bonus because I already had my degree and already had my nursing license and joined the military. And my parents were shocked. They were shocked that I did that. But it ended up being a very good decision for me. So I went to commissioned officer training and my first station was at Biloxi, Mississippi at Keesler Air Force Base. And then I worked as a kind of a floor nurse just starting out because I was a baby nurse and I really wanted to end up in the ICU. And so I kept asking to go to the ICU and finally the opportunity came and I was able to get into the ICU and get trained by some amazing people in the ICU. And kind of the creme de la creme of ICU nurses become CCAT nurses. And so CCAT nurses are critical care air transport nurses. And so CCAT teams are where there's an intensivist doctor, like a pulmonologist or something like that, a critical care nurse, and a respiratory therapist. There's three of us, and we are equipped to set up many mobile ICUs in any opportune aircraft. in wartime situations.
Okay.
And so it was a new concept that was being kind of born at that time. And so I was sent to San Antonio, Wolford Hall there to be trained as a CCAT nurse. And then because it was kind of peacetime, essentially, we would just do domestic flights, like take one patient from one ICU, take them to another ICU if they needed to be relocated for whatever reason. Okay. I was deployed to Prince Sultan Air Base in Saudi Arabia for Operation Northern Watch, learned a lot there. That was incredible. But then September 11th happened. And I got deployed to it. We first staged out of Incirlik Air Base in Turkey. And then we kind of kept getting moved downrange because we kind of went right after September 11th happened and just kept getting moved down. And I ended up at Bagram Air Base. And so, gosh, I didn't feel like I belonged there. I was like, I'm a nurse. They issued me my firearm and I was like, ah! Oh my gosh, that's not what I do. But quickly remembered, I am not just a nurse, I'm also an airman. So I had to put my big girl pants on and be an airman. And not just an airman, but a captain. Like I had to look out for some people.
Sure.
And so we had an amazing team. We really did. And we became family. And obviously it's intense times. We flew some missions, but it was just the honor of my life. It was the honor of my life to be there out of my comfort zone, not knowing like I should have paid more attention when we did our field exercises.
Sure.
I had no idea how to put up a tent. I should have paid more attention. But lots of people there to help. So thank God for the Army and the Marines because they saved me and taught me the ropes.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was Army and mm-hmm. Army infantry. So when
the Air Force shows up,
when you mentioned all the stuff that you're going through and you're like, I don't even know how to put up a tent. And yeah. I'm thinking to myself, well, neither do I, because we didn't use them. If we ever set them up, it was probably for the Air Force so that they could use them.
Well, that was so funny because, you know, in the Air Force, we are known to have the luxe life, you know,
sure.
And so we show up to Bagram and we have our rucksacks and then we just have our medical equipment. Mm-hmm. And that is it. That's what we show up with. And we think we're going to go to billeting and there's going to be someone with keys there to show us to our rooms. We are at war and we're in Afghanistan. There is no billeting.
Right.
You will sleep outside in the elements until you figure out your billeting. Because we were like, well, where do we get a tent? And they're like, you didn't come with a tent. We're like, no, what are you talking about? We're medical people. We don't know these things. And so we quickly had to learn who to befriend. And there weren't a lot of women on the base at the time because things were just starting to get built and going. And so that was interesting to be a woman at that kind of base so far forward downrange. But, you know, you just really see the camaraderie come together between the services. And not only that, but internationally, because Spain was there and France was there and England was there. And a lot of them were there for humanitarian missions. They weren't there for the combat missions. They were there for humanitarian. So it was such an interesting mesh of who ended up on that small little base at that time. And so it was bewildering. I was confused. I didn't know what I was doing, but I learned so much and really made some amazing relationships through that.
Yeah. And yeah. Another interesting thing too, that you just mentioned is like the people on that, and you said little base,
yeah.
when I was there, I was at Bagram just temporarily, just kind of passing through in 2010. So this is almost a decade later, and it was probably one of the largest bases I've ever been on. It was just so sprawling and huge, and there's streets
crazy
buildings all over the place. So they took care of the billeting for you. Don't worry about it. That got
oh
handled.
Good. I'm glad. My complaint card made its way.
It made its way. So it's when you fill out those cards, people are listening. They care. They actually care. It may take a decade to get anything done.
Oh my god! I was there. They were still clearing the mines because there were so many IUDs everywhere. I mean, they're just everywhere. And so it was crazy. Like even at night, they didn't issue us military people, I don't know why, they didn't issue us night vision, and it was a dark base. Like, you're not allowed to have flashlights. Some hilarious stories about being on a dark base.
Oh, I can imagine.
For people that where our jobs, we need light. We need to see what we're doing.
Absolutely.
That was an interesting thing to overcome. But like at night, you couldn't walk without night vision.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's pads you had to stay on, because if you go off the path, you can get blown up. And so we had to find people with night vision and kind of buddy up with them.
Sure.
And so they could walk us to the latrine or to wherever we needed to go. They didn't really have latrines. I don't know if you've ever been to a base where it's so early that they don't have like latrines. They had the PVC pipes sticking out of the ground and guys would just go into the PVC pipes. And I'm like, well, girls, that doesn't happen. That doesn't work. Like, what do we do?
I know. Yeah. It's just things that are kind of the growing pains, I guess, of setting up a new base and things like that.
Yes. But, yes.
Eventually these things get ironed out and they have, you know, the proper facilities for folks at that point. But
really, it was uncomfortable and awkward, but it was really fun too, because a lot of problem solving. Like, I remember the women were given from 0900 to 0930 shower time in the shower tent. And there was maybe 50 of us on post at that time. And so you can imagine 50 women trying to shower within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's chaos.
I can imagine.
And so I didn't get into the, because, I don't know, I'm just not assertive maybe. And so I was like, go ahead. You guys need to shower. You know, the nurse in me wanted to take care of everybody, make sure they had what they needed. And then the showers did get cut off and all the guys needed, to get in there for their time. And so then we met the Spanish, and the Spanish had the most amazing shower where it was like a car wash. And all us women, they invited us to come with their women, and we would line up like a car wash, and we would go through their shower tent.
Oh my gosh.
Have the washing station, the rinsing station, and the drying station.
It's efficient, I guess, like, right?
It's very efficient. And I was like, what is my life? Where am I? What am I doing?
All these years.
And so thank God for the Spanish that they took mercy upon us women and allowed us to go through their car wash.
That's funny.
So anyways, I did go serve there. Honor. It was such an honor to work on our troops in the air and get them home the best we could. Came back and, I had the wrong AFSC. My job just was highly deployable, and I had just gotten married and we wanted to have children. And I saw so many of my friends get deployed with babies at home. It just broke my heart. My respiratory therapist that was on my team, she had a 2-month-old that she had to wean in 24 hours and be on the flight line. And
oh, wow.
We wrote so many letters to congressmen while we were there trying to get her home. Like, this seems inhumane, this baby. But it's war, right?
It is. Yeah.
You can't pick people based on life circumstance. It's just, if you're in the military, you're in the military. And so she did great.
Great.
Got home, reunited with her baby and her husband. I got back and I just was like, I don't think I can do that. I don't think maybe I could, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to do that. And so there was a lot of stop loss going on at the time. And I found a window. There was like this 2-week window where they lifted it on my AFSC, and I did get out.
Okay.
And so I separated, and that was really bittersweet for me because I did love being in the military. Obviously growing up in the military, it's just in me, it's in my blood. So leaving that community was hard. But I was looking forward to, my next part of life. A month after getting out of the military and separating, we got pregnant with our first son.
Good timing.
So life began and didn't stop. And so we had our son, and I was stationed at Travis Air Force Base at the time. And so we were still in California, and we decided to move to Portland, Oregon, which is where we're at now. That's where my husband's family, and they are a big, fat Greek family. And so that movie is real. That is my life. And it's amazing. I love our family. And so we started our family here, had a second son, and I kind of felt burnt out of the ICU scene. Like all that adrenaline, flight nursing, it just felt like a lot. And I fell into hospice nursing, which I never thought I would. Wow. But I went on an interview and I was very honest with the interviewer. And I said, here, I'm here to practice my interviewing skills because in the military, you don't interview for jobs.
That's right. Yeah.
You're assigned to jobs. And so I didn't know how to interview as a nurse. And so I was just doing these interviews for fun, like not for fun, but to learn how mm-hmm. to interview. And she said, okay, so you're not interested in being a hospice nurse. I was like, oh, I'm an ICU nurse. You know, I want to do something, maybe PACU, something a little, you know, something along those lines, but a little less crazy. And she interviewed me. She said, I think you'd be a fantastic hospice nurse. And so I was like, well, you're offering me a job? And she said, yeah. And I'm like, what do I have I got to lose? Let's do this. And I stayed in for 15 years doing that.
Oh, wow. Oh.
I loved it. It's so sacred, you know, to be invited into someone's life at that time when sure. they're dying in with their family and their friends and their loved ones. And it was just a really sacred time. And it just made me see the art of nursing so much clearer and just really tapped into that part of me that I loved. So I got my master's degree. Thank God for the GI Bill. Got my master's degree in nursing leadership, and I became hospice nurse manager. And so I loved taking care of the nurses, which was also another honor for me to be able to do. And kind of skating along through life and raising our family here. And then in 2019, I suffered two separate brain injuries 6 months apart from each other. And I really thought, okay, these are kind of concussive type, you know, brain injuries. It'll be fine. I'll just rehab. And as the months went on and as the years went on, I realized it wasn't going to be that simple. And so in 2020, I had to retire my nursing license, which was heartbreaking because that's who I was. It's my identity. You know, people, Cherie the nurse, if they'd call me all the time, can you look at this rash? And with the advent of like FaceTime, that was next level. Like, take a look at this thing in my armpit. I'm I don't want to see that. And so that was a devastating blow. To not only lose my career and have to set that aside, but to lose like myself in brain injury.
Sure.
I thought I understood brain injury being a nurse. I had no idea. I had no clue what that experience was going to be like. And it's devastating. You know, some people are like, oh, it's just a concussion. That can be devastating. Mm-hmm. It can be devastating. And so I had to really figure out, okay, what I've lost cognitively, physically, and then what can I build from here? Like what's left? And I felt like not much was left, but I had a left-sided brain injury. Mostly was the left side. And so the doctors were saying, you really need to get into the right side of your brain and you need to fire that up. And I'm like, what does that mean in real life? Like, what does that mean? They're like creativity, presence, meditation. I thought I am in a buttload of trouble. Like that is not where I live. Sure. I don't live there. And so this doctor's like, just get like a adult coloring book, like a mandala coloring book and just start there. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I was very, you know, compliant patient and I colored for 10 minutes and hated every second of it. I hated it. I was like, this is not my life. This is not my future. There's got to be something else. So I ripped up the coloring book and I threw it away. I was so angry, so disappointed. But then one day I was watching YouTube and I saw this woman painting on a large canvas abstractly. Mm. And something in me recognized that she wasn't painting a landscape, a dog. She was painting her feelings. Like her feelings were ending up on that canvas. And something just lit something up in me like, I can do that. I have a lot of feelings, and I want to get them out. And so I went down. My dad had just bought a large, big screen TV. And so I cut the cardboard out of it to make a canvas because I was like, canvas is expensive. What if this goes wrong? I don't want to spend money on a canvas. So I brought the cardboard home, got the tempera paints out that my kids had from school. Mm-hmm. And I just painted on that thing and something unlocked. I don't know. I, to this day, I don't know. I'm so grateful for that moment that I just did something to me at the time seemed silly. Like, I'm just going to go paint on this piece of cardboard just because I'm bored and I'm frustrated and I'm mad. But in doing that, something unlocked in me. And so I just kept doing it. I kept doing more and I kept watching free YouTube channels that would teach people how to paint abstract, understanding what abstract painting was. Mm-hmm. And then at the time I was doing a lot of soul work because I feel like I lost my soul. Like I was grieving myself, but I was still alive. Like my body's still alive. My mind is still alive, but I was grieving myself. Like I missed the old Cherie. I want her back. And little did I know that today I'm so grateful for that brain injury because I don't want that Cherie back. She's still a part of me, but what I am today is 1,000 times better than what I was. It's my experience of life, my experience of connection with people is like next level. And so I'm grateful now. I had to get through some shit to get there, but.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of us go through transitions of one sort or another where we feel like we're losing an identity. It could even just be leaving the military where you know, we were sergeant so-and-so or we were captain or major or whatever our rank was. We were who we identified as and that's who we were. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like a light switch going off where now you take off the uniform and you're no longer that person anymore. And you don't have that responsibility. You don't have that team that you're working with. You don't have any of that support there for you. And that identity is just gone. And then when you have, technically it's a career change, but it's really an identity change too. But when you have this other career change, right, where you identified as a nurse and this was who you were and what you're all about. And then you get to a point where you can't do it anymore based on this injury. And then now what? You know, it's kind of, I got to imagine it's just this empty feeling where.
Yes, like, it's a grieving. It's just this. Yeah. And there's so much, you know, all the steps of grieving, right? But anger, so much anger and bitterness and resentment. Like, why? Why me? Why did this happen? And I remember feeling a little bit like that when I'd come home from deployment, because I thought that when we'd come home, the team would get together and there would be like this psychologist or something like help us process it and talk about it. No, you just go right back to work and you are no longer deployed and you are no longer sleeping next to these people you've been sleeping next to for 9 months. Like just back to life. Yeah. I felt so jarred. Like, oh, I remember my marriage felt a little like, ooh, like I know I'm married to you and you're my husband, but I literally lived with these people in a tent for 9 months. Like we lived together. So it was,
and then
it was bizarre.
Trying to figure out your place in the world, whether it's in your own family, in your own home, and trying to figure out, because, you know, the folks that are left back home, they're figuring out
they
life
up.
Without
yes.
you. Not that they're not thinking about you, that they don't care about you, but they...
But they had to move forward without you.
They ate all their meals without you. They you know, watched television without you. They went out for ice cream without you. You know, all the things that people do, they were doing all those things without you. And then now you're back, and then all of a sudden, we got to fit this person back into this world.
And no one is really who they were when you left.
Right.
Right. Your family and friends, they had to grow and the world was changing. And then obviously when we come back, we're not the same.
Sure.
We've seen some things, we've experienced some things, but we're not the same person. So it's a really tough transition.
It is. Yeah. And you're not growing together, I guess, to your point is you're not, you know, when you're experiencing the same things and you're doing a lot of the stuff together, you kind of grow together and you kind of move in the same direction. But when you're experiencing combat, that's a different kind of growth. And when you're experiencing, you know, fun stuff at home or even the stressful stuff at home, the bills that need to get paid, the kids that need to get picked up from soccer practice or whatever, like all those things, it kind of move you in separate directions. And then, so now we got to come back in the middle somewhere and meet up and figure out how do we piece all this together? And, then add on top of it something like what you went through with a brain injury, and then now, okay, how do we handle this? What are the new expectations of how, like, who's going to take care of what? You know, what are you
That's
able
right.
to take care of? What is
That's right.
somebody else going to be expected to take care of? Because maybe some of the limitations that might be there. I don't know
That's right.
all the details, but you know, each injury or illness or whatever is going to have their own unique set of
Absolutely.
Questions that have to get asked like that. But
yeah.
but you found, it seems like, I don't know if it's necessarily healing is the right word, but you found some peace at least through the artwork that you've been doing, right?
Yes. And healing is the right word. I would go every few months to the functional neurologist, and he would do testing on my brain. And at some point he's like, what are you doing? Things are getting better. Like, what are you doing? And I told him, I'm painting. And I thought he would laugh at me like, oh my God. But he goes, well, what do you mean you're painting? I said, I have big canvases and I just throw a lot of paint at it. And he's like, wow. So when I describe my process to him, he's like, Sri, you've been rehabbing your brain because it's standing there is balance, vestibular, you know, rehab. Using my right arm to paint, because I am right-handed, was firing up things in the left that had been damaged. One thing that really I struggled with a lot with brain injury was making decisions. And I was a decisive person. Like I didn't shy away from decisions. Like I love making decisions. I was firm in them. But after brain injury, I couldn't choose what to eat. Mm-hmm. I couldn't choose what to wear. If someone was like, choose a color, I'd be like, nope. I don't know why, but I couldn't choose. It was that part of my brain that was affected. And so he said, he goes, how do you choose colors? I said, I don't, I feel colors. And he goes, what do you mean you feel? I said, I look at my paints and I'm drawn to how a color makes me feel. And I choose that. I don't choose like, oh, I want to paint orange today or blue. I'm like, I feel angry today. Red, black, orange.
Sure.
And so then that's how I was choosing my colors. He goes, well, that was helping you start making decisions again and just starting to ramp that up, except I was doing it in a different framework. You know, I wasn't doing it like cognitively and intellectually. I was sinking down more into my heart and in my soul and feeling things. And so that's how I do things now. I don't really want to go up in my head. I was so in my head for my whole life. I didn't know it, but I was. And now sinking down in your soul and in your spirit and just trying to connect with that, it's a place now where it's intuitive. And that's why the type of painting I do is called intuitive abstract painting. Because when I approach a blank canvas, I have no idea what it's going to look like. I have no outcome in mind. I just start and I react and I flow. And that is so foreign to anything. I mean, nursing is you better follow the rules. You better
Sure.
stay in the box or you're going to kill somebody.
Sure.
And so, you know, the roles are very defined. Everything is so defined and structured, which is what I loved. You know, there was not a lot of questioning and, you know, it was very structured. But my life now, so unstructured. It's so unstructured. But that's, I find so much joy in it because I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. I thought I would just go back to the way I was somehow, but I didn't. And now I felt like, okay, I was brave enough to try. And now I'm just like, oh, why didn't I do this when I was 5?
Sure. And when you have such a sudden change, like what you experienced, because this was, you know, you had an injury and then, you know, you kind of realized, gee, I don't think I can keep doing the things that I had been doing. And instead of fighting it and be like, well, no, I'm going to be stubborn. I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm going to keep doing it. And even though you maybe couldn't do it and you're going to just try to fit a square peg through a round hole and it's not going to work out right. And then to your point, like you were saying before, you could end up hurting someone or killing someone if you're you know, in the right place and you're not doing the right things and all that.
Right.
And if your brain's not functioning the way it needs to, that could cause some problems for somebody else, which is the last thing. I know someone like yourself or, you know, anyone
that's
in
right.
the nursing or medical
do
field.
Do no harm.
Yeah.
You don't
want to hurt anybody. And so, you know, sometimes you have to kind of take yourself out of this and say, look, is this person objectively, is this person talking about yourself? Is this the right person for this job? And I guess, you know, in certain circumstances, the answer might be no. And then it's really just a matter of figuring out, okay, well, if I'm not the right person for that job anymore. Well, what am I the right person for? And what can I do? I think you had mentioned that earlier. It's like, let's take stock of what it is that you can do. And you can look at colors, you can feel things, you can still do that. Go onto a canvas. And now when you start painting, do you have an object that you're trying to paint in mind when you start, or is it like a blank slate and you're just looking at it and you just start throwing stuff up there until you figure out what it's going to be?
Yeah, it reveals itself. Okay. It's the best way I can explain it, is it reveals itself. And I just move. That's what I do. I just move. I put paint. I use all kinds of mark making tools. I use spray paint. A lot of my stuff will kind of start to lean graffiti. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I love it. I love graffiti. And so I think it's just, it's layers and layers. A lot of my work, the way it started, you can't even see in the end product how it started.
Okay.
But I do believe that the energy of whatever was there is still there, and it adds to all of the layers that I'm talking. Like, a lot of my paintings will be between 10 and 15 layers of paint that have gone on. And, you know, the question that I'd always have to ask myself is, when is it done? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a hard question to answer when it's abstract. Sure. You know, when you're painting a house, you know, something that looks like a house, you're like, well, it's a house. Good job. But when it's abstract, you're like, is it finished? It could never be finished. But that's what I learn about myself, about my intuition of when I'm knowing. And when you were talking about, you know, having that stubbornness of like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to just power through it and not, you know, and then trying to find something new. Like, in that story arc was a lot of, yes, I was stubborn, as you can imagine, you know, being a nurse and being military minded. And, you know, I was very stubborn and very bitter and angry about that. And so there was this time where I did try to force the round peg into the square hole. Yeah. And then there was that time where I didn't find painting right away. And there was this dark depression that sets in, because you feel like, I'm not good for anything. Like, the thing that I thought I was good at and the thing I had to offer the world is gone now. Now I'm nothing. Like, what your mind just goes there so easily, you know, to devalue and to be negative about ourselves. And then it is a fight for your life. It is a fight for your life to get back and say, no, I have value. Mm-hmm. I have value innately, just being here, brain damaged, broken. I still have value. I just want purpose now.
Sure.
I need to find my purpose. And so little did I know that over years of fighting those battles and claiming my space now, it's that I'm still a healer, not as a nurse, but through creativity and art, you know, bringing healing to people through my art and sharing with people that creativity does bring healing, because we are creative beings. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be art. It doesn't have to be dance. It doesn't have to be writing a book. It could be having conversations like we're having right now is creative.
Sure.
And so we are creative beings, and we need to lean into that, because I think our society just really takes us away from being creative anymore. You know, it's done for us, in essence,
that's true. Yeah. And I mean, even just looking at, you know, buildings that are around, if you look at an old building, you can look at it and say, oh, it has some character, that has some, you know, there's something to it. You could tell maybe the time period that it was built. And you drive by a building that was built in the last, you know, couple of years, and it's looks like a box, and there's nothing to it. And
it's lifeless. It's like there's no life to it. Yeah.
And so it's, I don't know. I suppose that's a style, but it's kind of a bland style. It's not really doing it for me. But you're right. You know, there's a lot of creativity to be had. In like you said, it's not just art. It could be, you know, could be music. It could be dance. It could be writing. Yes. It could be conversations. It can be gardening.
How you dress, how you present yourself to the world. I mean, that's creative.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so many different things out there, and you know, when you discover what that thing is for you that allows you to express yourself or to just be creative in a way that maybe you hadn't been before, it opens up this whole new world of possibilities for you, right?
It blows your mind. It does. It blows your mind to get to, I just see the world through a different lens.
Yeah.
Like it's so much more open. It's so much more collaboration. Like we are all so connected. We're all having the same experience in different colors. You know, mm-hmm. We all have grief. We all have pain. We all have mirror. I mean, there's a story in my life that my father, who I was very close to because we shared, you know, we just shared kindred spirits with each other. And he was a fixer and I was the girl that would hold the flashlight and hand him the tools as he was fixing everything. And we had a great relationship. And in 2023, they moved here like 8 years ago, my mom and dad, mm-hmm. to be close to me and my family. And they took up RVing and my dad loved fishing, never caught a damn fish, but he loved fishing. Like he just loved it. And so they took their RV and in 2023, they took it up to Washington, the Washington coast. And he went out fishing and tragically a rogue sneaker wave killed him. It just took him off the jetty, and killed him. And he was lost at sea. And the Coast Guard, the Sheriff's Department, they were all out in their boats and helicopters looking for him. And they couldn't recover his body. And by the time I got there to be with my mom, you know, I was about 10 minutes away from her. And there was some commotion. She was on the phone with me and there was this commotion. And then the phone cut out because she was on the beach. Long story short, two sea lions brought my father's body to the beach, to where my mom was sitting, because she would not leave the beach. The police couldn't get her to leave because she's like, how can I leave? Like, this is where he was. Yeah, right. I can't leave without him. And it was about 7 hours after he went missing that two sea lions, and my mom thought he was swimming because she saw him in the water. She goes, oh my God, he survived. He's swimming to me. And she thought he was, you know, swimming. And when, as it got close, she tried to go in the water and she can't swim. Mm. And so the chaplain from the police department pulled her out and said, it's too dangerous. I'll go get him and I'll help him. And as he went in the water, she was able to back up and look. And that's when she saw it wasn't his arms moving. It was two sea lions, just one by each arm. And it's so unbelievable. Like, it's so crazy. It sounds like a Bible story.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
In the Old Testament.
Sure.
It's such a, but come on. Like, yeah. That's the life we're living. And as much as I hate that my father's not with me, and as much as I hate that he was taken so early, in my opinion, but to have that miracle happen, it's like, okay, life is so much bigger. It's so much bigger than what we see or understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's, you know, some, I guess a little silver lining that can come through all of that, because, you know, obviously nobody wants any of that kind of situation to happen, but at least you have some closure. You know what happened, where he is. It's not like he's just adrift out in the sea. And you never know, you know, is he somewhere in the Pacific or did he, you know,
exactly.
What happened, you know?
Exactly.
And so you have that closure at least. And
to say goodbye to him one more time and touch him, you know, and do the full military honors and bury him. I mean, it was just like, wow. And not that we couldn't have done that, but just to know he was there. I think it would have, I mean, and the thing is, I don't know why it happened for us. There are people that are lost to sea all the time and children. And, you know, I don't know why that happened for us, but it did bring so much comfort and it was a silver lining.
Yeah.
It was like, gosh, it was this awesome awfulness.
You know? Right.
It was just this awesomely awful. And so that's what kind of sparked in me, like, I need to lean into life. Mm-hmm. I can't keep resisting what life's trying to do for me and what I believe God is trying to bring into my life. And my dad wanted me to start a business. And I think he liked my art because it was mine and I was his daughter and he liked everything I did. But I think he saw all the paintings piling up in my house and he felt for my husband. He's like, you need to sell some of this, like get rid of it or give it away or something.
Sure.
And so it was about 2 months after he died that I was like, I can't sit around and just wish he was here. Like, that's not going to do anything.
Right.
And so that's when I started Karen Dennis Fine Art and started a business and actually painting for, you know, for others. And it's just been a joy. It's brought a lot of joy.
Yeah, and that I think is good. I mean, obviously, to save your husband a little bit and get some of the piles out of the house, but you know, also, you know, it gives more of a sense of purpose too. It's like, hey, this is now my business. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, this is my thing now. And yeah.
And who knew I could own a business? Like, I didn't know I could start a business, or I didn't know anything about any of it.
And,
but you learn, right?
Why not?
You just learned.
And why not? Why not? You know, someone who has something of value. You know, those artwork is valuable to certain people, and they would like to buy it for whether it's for their home or for their business or whatever it is that they want it for. And so there's value there. So why not? Compensated for that value, you know,
you're
creating the stuff anyways. And so I think the reason why I'm kind of going over that and bringing that up is because there are probably some folks who are listening to this who are doing things that they just consider like a hobby or a side thing that they're doing, and they really love it, but it's like, oh, but I got to go to work because I got to pay the bills. I got to be able to afford the, you know, I got to be able to afford the canvases and the paint and the brushes and all the other things that go into, you know, the artwork, like you're doing. Those things, like you said, they're not cheap. So you got to get a job to pay for that stuff somehow. Why not have a job that pays for it by just kind of having people pay for you to do those things, you know?
It pays for itself. It
pays for itself, exactly. So, you know, there are things out there. I'm sure that some of the listeners are probably thinking to themselves about something that they do anyways, because they enjoy it.
Yes.
Figure out a way to make money from it.
And there isn't a better time, because for creatives, the gatekeepers aren't in place anymore.
Yeah.
You know, with the internet, I thought, oh, when I start a business, that's going to be hard, because I'm just thinking business, things like numbers and accounting and all that. And that's a part of it, but that's a small part for me, because I don't pay attention. Like, I just do what I need to do for legal reasons.
Sure.
But the connection, because I don't have to be represented by a gallery. I don't have to prove to somebody that I'm a professional artist. If I can get on Instagram, and that is where I've connected with people, the world is so wide open.
Yeah.
You can sell your stuff. I mean, there isn't a better time. It's really built for it, this social media.
Sure.
It's built for connection and creatives to get their products out there.
And quite
so
frankly,
it's exciting.
If you're limiting yourself to a local gallery that you're putting your stuff in, you're limiting the market of people who are going to be willing to purchase that stuff, right?
There's people in Europe and in Asia and in Africa. There's people all over the world that when they see what you're offering, they're going to be like, I love it.
Yeah, sure.
I want that, you know? And so if you're just limiting yourself to the little town that you're in, I would be screwed.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I'm not going to sell a lot here.
Right.
But if you open yourself up, and I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard. You're very vulnerable, you know, putting yourself out there, sharing maybe your story. It is vulnerable, but the reward for being brave, it's so compounded, and it makes your life so much richer.
Yeah. No. And I think when you look at it like that, like there's that reward. It's more than just a financial reward of,
you
know, making money from selling a, you know, whatever it is that creative piece that someone might be making. But there's a lot more to it in terms of the just kind of fulfillment that you get from that, right? Now, there's a lot of, we talked a lot about the highlights, the good stuff from all of this. I gotta imagine there are some challenges along the way as well, right?
Oh, God,
what was maybe the most challenging part of this whole journey for you, whether it be getting into the artwork, starting the business, or, you know, any of the stuff what was kind of like the most challenging piece for you?
I think the most challenging piece for me was believing in myself.
Mm.
Okay. As a nurse, you are validated and rewarded for your performance, right? You're either a good nurse or crappy nurse. And I was a good nurse, and I prided myself in the care that I provided to my patients. And when you are a creative and you start your own business, so many doubts, so many limiting beliefs, so much self-hatred talk, that negative self-talk comes in, like, who are you to say you're an artist now? Like, there's no degree. I mean, I could have gotten a degree, but I didn't want to go back to school for art. And I didn't know how that would serve me because I was learning art by doing it and hiring art, you know, art teachers. And so I didn't have to, I didn't have the letters behind my name or the rank, you know, behind my name. And so it took a, the hardest part was for Cherie to meet Cherie, like who I truly am and my intuition. And that takes time. Because if you want to trust your intuition, just like if you want to trust your significant other, you have to spend time with them in order to trust them. Well, that goes for us too. So for me to trust my intuition, if I'm an intuitive artist, I had to spend time with me. And that sucks. It just sucked at the beginning because I wasn't good at it. I didn't feel comfortable doing it. It felt woo to me, like I'm getting a little woo. But I knew that if I didn't go inward and really be able to hype myself up, who is going to want what I have to offer?
Sure.
Who? If I can't believe it in myself, what am I offering? Just some paint on a canvas. But what I'm wanting to offer is energy on a canvas, you know, to move people and to make them ask questions and make them, you know, wonder, why isn't this beautiful? It's kind of ugly, but I love it. You know, it's like, those are the kind of things that I want to draw out in people, because that's what I needed to draw out of myself. So I think the hardest part for me was believing in myself and really trying to build that confidence to know that I'm not perfect, but what I have to offer is valuable, because I'm a human being and we all have value. We all have value. And it's, I think too, not having an expectation of who it's going to connect with. Cause I think I tried to think, oh, these rich people that have these giant houses or big business buildings or hospitals, they're going to come knocking on my door. They're going to want my art. And it's the normal person in my neighborhood that just can't live without it, that puts it in their house. And that is so meaningful to me, you know, that we can't project who we're going to connect with, you know, with whatever we do. We just have to be open. And that's the hard part, was being open.
Yeah, that is hard. And having that confidence in yourself, I know, I mean, we're our own worst enemies sometimes when it comes to that kind of thing. And we can beat ourselves up and tell ourselves a thousand different reasons why we're not good enough, smart enough, capable enough, whatever. And when you are doing that to yourself, you start to believe it. And then you keep doing it. And then
it's a vicious cycle.
Exactly. You go down this rabbit hole, and it's at some point you look up and it's like, how did I get this far down? And
how
do I get out? And that becomes difficult. So when you just kind of flip that switch and be like, hey, no, like I do have value. This is something valuable. Is it for everybody? No, it's not.
No.
You know, and you know, someone might look at it and think, no, like absolutely, this is not for me. Okay, good.
Yeah.
No problem.
Move on
and we'll find somebody else. And then somebody else will look at it and be the same exact piece. They'll look at it and be like, this is beautiful and I want this. And I you know, just take my money and you know, let's sell. So, and I think it's important to realize that you're not, no matter what it is that you do, especially in a creative field, you're not going to be everything to everybody. And if you are, then you're kind of nothing to anybody.
You're vanilla.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You're just kind of vanilla. That's not what you want.
Right.
You want to make, you want to disrupt, you know, you want to disrupt a little bit and I don't know, just pull emotion and just humanness out of people instead of us being robots.
Yeah.
And just, you know, buying art at Hobby Lobby.
Right.
You know, you can, but does that art have fire in it? Does it have like, does it punch you in your gut?
Sure.
Probably not. Right. It probably doesn't.
Right. And to your point, you go into a place like Hobby Lobby and you'll see 10 of the same paintings just stacked up on the shelf, right, one after the other. And so, you know, they're selling those in bulk. They're manufactured someplace. They're printed somehow. And it's not like someone is standing there with a brush and painting every single one individually. I mean, someone probably painted it at some point. They just
cut
it out
originally.
Yeah, originally, and then they just.
Or now AI is a great painter, apparently.
There you go. Yeah. So you get all sorts of different ways for these things to be generated, but then it's robotic, it's mechanical, it doesn't have that passion, that fire that you're talking
flavor.
About.
You want our lives to be filled with texture and flavor, and that's what makes it so beautiful.
Yeah.
It really is. It's beautiful.
What advice would you give to maybe another veteran or somebody else who's out there looking to get into some sort of creative or maybe non-traditional path in their life post-service and you know, when they're trying to rediscover who they are and what they're meant for and what they're trying to do. What would you give for a little bit of advice there?
You know, someone that's a veteran and someone's coming out of service, what they have innately is courage, you know, to just be to serve our country in the military takes courage. And so use that, tap into that courage and be brave enough to put yourself out there because it is vulnerable. But what I found was I couldn't do it alone. Mm. You have to find community. And so if you like to write, find a writing community. If you like it, you know, there's probably veteran communities that like to write, you know, and small business owners that are veterans that where you can share the similarities in your life and the struggles that you have in your life. And that is where I think magic happens is when you can find a community. It doesn't have to be big and it can even be online. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be in person, you know, because you can find community in the internet where people come together on Zoom and man, it's powerful. And so finding a community of people that are doing what you're doing, it doesn't have to be exactly your craft, but are wanting to build something and to create something. I think that's so important. And then believe in yourself and do that inner work. And I know that sounds so like, well, how do you do the inner work? I always say this, but I think it's a Buddhist saying that says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Okay.
And so I think if you are just ready to learn, how many times are you just like wondering about something and all of a sudden a podcast comes across and they're talking about that thing that you're wondering about, or you're watching YouTube and you're like, oh my gosh, I was watching YouTube when I saw the woman painting that changed my life, that YouTube. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever, no one's prepared for that, you know, but I think I was maybe in a posture in life where I was willing to explore.
Yeah.
And that's why I was looking at artists. Maybe I searched artists or whatever. I was looking at people painting. And then that one woman comes across. And so she becomes this teacher in my life. And mm-hmm. books will come across. You'll be listening and someone's like, you should read this book. It's titled this. And you're like, oh my gosh. Or books that you've read before. And they didn't resonate. And then you read it again, you're like, holy crap, changed my life.
Sure.
So teachers, I think, are waiting to appear. And we just have to be ready to learn. We have to get into the student role. Mm-hmm. And so learning, just be a sponge and learn everything you can. I learned on the internet how to start a business. I really had no idea how to start a business. But I learned through YouTube. And then I found there's books for artists starting businesses. Well, then it's all laid out. Like I don't have to recreate the wheel. Okay. I just have to follow that and be open to, okay, I've never done this. I'm scared. This could be a flop, but what if it's not?
Right.
What if it's not?
And there are so many resources out there these days between the internet, you know, just Google searches for different things or YouTube and
ChatGPT is amazing.
You get tons of resources and information on there. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's not 100% perfect, but nothing ever is. You know, even if you read a tutorial from someone else who's gone through this before, it's not going to be 100% relevant to what you're doing. And so you're going to have to use your brain a little bit and try to figure out, you know, what tweaks you need to make for your own unique situation. But you know, to your point, there's no doctor out there writing a prescription that this is the thing that you need to be doing. You know, you need to be creating artwork and you need to be, you know, selling it and you need to be, you know, that's how you find purpose or meaning in your life. Yeah. There's no doctor out there who's going to write that kind of prescription.
No.
You kind of have to be receptive, like you said, receptive to this as a possibility, and and be receptive to
and move the needle just a little towards that.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have to make this giant jump; just little needle moves towards that, and then it starts to unfold. I mean, life, there's so much mystery in life that I don't understand, but life has a way of unfolding if you have the right mindset and the right intentions.
And it progresses in a logical manner too, because if you look back on your journey that we just got done talking about here, and if you started off the journey as, I watched a YouTube video on how to paint, and I went out and I registered a business and I opened up an art studio. And I had no paintings to sell or anything, but I started that way. I'd be like, are you out of your mind?
Are you insane?
What are you doing? You know? So no, you don't just dive into it.
No.
Go test the
water. Dip your toe in.
Yeah. You know, figure it out. And, you know, maybe you do it and you're like, I enjoyed the process, but the outcome kind of sucked. And I don't think that this is a business. And fine, there's nothing wrong with that. You might just do it for the sake of doing it, and that's fine too.
Yes,
I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and start a business for whatever it is. It could just be for the sake of doing it, because that's what kind of fills your soul.
That brings you joy.
It brings you joy, right? Exactly.
Yeah. But if there's that niggling in your mind, it's like, could this be a business?
Sure.
Follow it.
Yeah.
Like pull that string. See what happens.
And it doesn't mean that you have to go quit your job overnight and just dive into it 100%. Like, this could be something that you kind of just do on the side and see where it takes you. And if it gets you to that point where it's like, hey, you know what? I'm actually making more money doing this than I was doing at my job. Then okay, fine. Maybe, maybe you want to leave that job and dive into this head first. But you know, it's
you're again, right. It's not either or. It's not either or, it's both and, you know, and it is a progression, and you grow into whatever it's supposed to be, whatever that is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you think about all your life. You go to grade school, you go to middle school, high school. you don't just like wake up one day in fifth grade and be like, you know what, I'm going to be a nurse, and boom, now I'm a nurse and I'm just jumping right into it. No, there's a progression that takes place.
And yes. You change your mind 4,000 times.
Exactly.
You know? In college.
Sure. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's
nothing.
Kind of part of the whole purpose of it is so that you can try these things out, figure it out. Like, is that what I actually want to be doing? And if it is, great. And if it's not, well, good. Now you have time to go figure out what.
Then you learned that.
Yes.
You learned that.
Yeah. Not
and
a failure.
That,
it's just
a piece of information.
Exactly. Yep.
Absolutely. And that makes life so exciting.
It does.
Because you don't have to have it all figured out.
No.
And you don't have to know the how all the time.
Right.
You
right.
don't. You just figure it out. And I think there's something really endearing about someone that's trying to figure it out. Like, you want to link arms with them, like, all right, I'm going to help you figure this out, you know? And I think that's the community that's out there. Because when I see someone that's like, I might start a painting business, I'm like, come on, girl, let's go. Let's meet for coffee. I'm going to show you, you know? It's I don't know. It's exciting. It's exciting. It's very connecting.
That's great. Yeah. For any of the listeners who are interested in kind of following along with what you do or learn a little bit more about your artwork, where can they go to find out a little bit more information?
Yeah, I have a website. It's KarenDanisFineArt.com. I also have a newsletter through that website. So you'll see a little pop-up that says join my community. So there's a little newsletter. And I talk about my travels. I talk about art shows. I talk about pieces that I'm working on. Sometimes people like to know the process in the pieces and why they end up the way they do or how they end up the way they do, because I never know why. And then I'm pretty active on Instagram and Facebook. And so the handles are at Karen Danis Fine Art. And so I post my pieces there. This year has been travel year, because with brain injury, I couldn't travel for a long time and I missed that. But 2025 has been my victory lap for travel. And so I've been all over the world this year. We went to Australia and funny enough is none of these trips were planned. Like January 2025, we had one trip planned and it was a cruise with another family and we were all going to do that. So that was it. But this year I have gone to the south of France. I've gone to Greece. I've gone to Australia, New York City. I mean, it's been nuts. It's been nuts. But this is the unfolding that I'm talking about.
Sure.
And it doesn't have to look that spectacular all the time, because it sure doesn't for me. This year just was, for whatever reason, this victory lap, I think, of everything that I'd gone through. But yeah, it just happens. Life starts to happen. And it's what we want. And we have to be honest with what we want and say it out loud and not be ashamed of that. And say, you know, I want to write a book. And I'm working with a book coach now and I'm writing a book. And so who knows? I'm pulling the string.
Well, that's awesome. And so for the listeners, we'll have links to all of the website and the social media links in the show notes for you. So you can check those out. Definitely go check out the artwork. I'm looking at some, you know, behind you right now, and it's looking pretty awesome. And I'm sure those are just a handful of things. So I'm sure there's a whole bunch of others that are kind of in a similar feel there. So I'm just really encourage folks to go check it out and check out that artwork.
And I want to thank you, Scott, for what you do and for giving voice, especially to veterans. And, you know, I think I wrote you at first, like, I'm not sure if I'm the voice you want on your podcast, because I don't know. I just felt like, because I've watched some of your podcasts and these are like some badass people there. I admire so much. And I'm like, I don't know. But I really appreciated what you said, is that every veteran's voice is important and we all have our experiences that we can share and that it could help somebody.
Exactly.
So thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that. And, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, the story that you share here could be the start of somebody else's healing journey that they may be going through something very similar.
I hope so.
And it might just resonate. You know, we're talking about, you never know. You might listen to a podcast. You might watch a YouTube video.
That's right.
You might see something on the local news or something that just triggers something for you and gets you moving in the right direction. So hopefully this episode does that.
And if that does happen for someone, please reach out. Yeah. I would love to connect and hear your story, because that's what keeps me going too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, same with me. Every now and again, I'll get a message from someone, not every time, but you know, I'm sure there's other people out there who just don't reach out, but you know, every once in a while I do get a message from someone and they'll say, I really needed to hear that message today. Ooh. And it, you know, that really helped out with one thing or another. And it just, to me,
so
I'm like,
awesome.
Okay, awesome. Let's keep going with
let's
that.
Let's keep doing this.
Mission accomplished. Let's do it
that's
again.
That's right. So, that's right.
So anyways, I do appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your journey, your story and everything that you're doing. It's very inspiring. And I'm hopeful that it will be inspiring to some of those listeners. So thanks again.
Thank you.